We're aboard the research craft Assipenser, joining Cornell University researchers as they study the dredging associated with the World Trade Center disaster and its effects on the fish and bottom life of the Hudson River. To learn more about anything you hear on this program, visit us at www.hudsonriver.vassar.edu. Coming up on the Hudson River, the eco calendar, a soundscape of the river, and more. Next, we join Cornell's Anne Gallagher as she and Dr. Mark Bain sample the bottom muck using a ponar dredge, then rinsing amply.
Okay, this is called a ponar dredge. It's a 9 by 9 by 9 square once the jaws snap. Go ahead, drop it down there. And it shuts like a big set of jaws when we trap all the dirt, the sludge, and all the invertebrates that are living in the pond within a 9 by 9 square. And the sound you'll hear is actually the same, it's the same hydraulic winch that we use to put out the trawl.
No, we did. We're good.
Yeah, we did. That's a good sample.
So this is bottom mud.
Yeah, so the best way to look at the invertebrate community that's actually living in between the piers is we just collect a portion of the bottom and see what we find there.
It's still pretty bad. Not so good.
Yeah, so the stuff on the bottom, the stuff that we dig up on the bottom is really just like a big, thick, sludgy mud, and it sticks to everything. So we hose off the inside of the ponar, and then we'll end up doing, we have a bucket full of muck and water, and we end up putting it through this bucket. There's a fat sieve on the bottom, but the actual mesh on top is 500 microns. So what we do is collect all the invertebrates, 500 microns.
Or larger.
And larger.
Now, why are you not interested in the smaller ones?
500 microns you can still see with the naked eye, and so we can pick the stuff out of the debris without using a microscope. And then we use a microscope to identify everything. And what we'll do is we'll filter this sample, and then we'll take the contents of this and put it in a bag of formalin, which is a preservative, until someone goes through and picks out the actual animals from the debris.
And what kind of animals are these?
The biggest things, the most common things we're getting are a lot of clams.
In some ways, the smaller organisms, the bottom organisms, are more indicative of what's going on because they stay in situ.
Yep,
they're not moving around.
They're not very mobile.
If you find a lot of them or you find a certain kind of them, what does that indicate?
That they're not all indicator species. They don't all tell you just by what the species is, what's going on down there. And so we look at more like community metrics. And so how diverse is the community that's living on the bottom?
So what happens next here with the sample?
All right, so the next thing we do is rinse everything through this. And I like to wear a glove because I think the mud's really gross. And maybe not so clean. So this is just a shame you can't show this on the radio. This is what we're caching.
Well, why don't you describe it to us?
Okay. It's a little bit like sandy mud. It's very thick, and it's very dark. I guess it's sort of a blackish brown, thick mud.
You suppose there's a fair amount of oil in that?
There probably is a lot of oil in it from settling out.
And is that what's making it so dark?
Some of that is that, and some of it is just it's anoxic mud.
It's anoxic, meaning there hasn't been much oxygen down there for a while.
Right.
So in terms of what you're finding, are you finding
healthy organisms? Well, she hasn't gone through to identify, so we really don't know whether we're getting a variety that should be reflective of a healthy estuary area like these habitats. So we don't know yet until she does the laboratory work. There's extensive laboratory work on these small organisms in the mud. Fish are nice because we know what they are when we just pull them out of the net. But they move around, they're less sensitive to local conditions.
That looks like a fancy piece of equipment there, a plastic spoon she's using to spoon it out into a poor, fancy-looking plastic bag that looks like a real sample bag.
Right, the bag is for real. The spoon is very high-tech.
Voila.
It's not a good job for anyone who wants to stay clean or dry.
Back at the 14th Street dock, Dr. Bain sums up the research.
In terms of fish, which we've identified and we record those as we go, I could say some things. The invertebrates, we really need to do the lab work, so we don't know the numbers or kinds that we've got in those plastic bags. But for fish, we've caught a high variety in the 3 months that we've been doing this project. And this just tells us that the harbor's supporting a healthy and wide variety of fish. That's what we're seeing so far. So that's good. We have seen differences among our sites, and so far the dredge site has produced relatively few fish. That's a preliminary observation, and we'll have to see if that holds up through time.
And couldn't that be because it's deeper there, and they tend to like the shallower waters?
There could be differences in the catch rate there, as well as other sites, because of the habitat. It's also protected from the current there more than some of the other locations. But we record all that, and we'll be able to look at patterns of variation in fish numbers and invertebrate numbers among all of our study sites along the Manhattan coast here. So in the end, we'll be able to sort that out. But I guess the overall thing that's important for us already recognize is that we are getting a high variety of fish, including several commercial and recreationally important species that are using the city's shoreline. This is an area that is supporting fish of value and a variety of aquatic life. It's not dead or grossly polluted habitat.
So do you envision, possibly as the park develops, that people will actually be fishing?
A couple of these piers will be constructed with new facilities on top for fishing and water observation, wildlife viewing. And so there'll be more opportunity for that kind of fishing activity once all the facilities are in place.
And in terms of your hypothesis, what is it for this study, and how much of it has proven to be true or not true so far?
Actually, on this one, we did not have an advance idea of whether the dredging that took place was a negative or positive for fish and aquatic life on the bottom. The reason for that is, in almost every case, in the aquatic world, whenever you do something, you tend to favor one group of organisms over another, and so it's not like it's bad for fish. Often a change is good for some and not for others. Some people did speculate that deepening the shoreline waters was good for striped bass. It's thought that they prefer deep water against the solid shoreline. It aids in their feeding on small fish. So it may be that it's a desirable change for striped bass, which is the most important fish inhabiting these waters from a public use standpoint.
You're going to need a couple of years to know that, right?
We would need a couple years to know that, and if it's good for striped bass, it's probably at the detriment of some other fish, and there's other high-profile species here as well.
It was the end of a hot work day for the crew. Just after we turned off our mic, two who may as well be tan twins, Tyler Cowney and Matt Horan, jump into the Hudson off 14th Street. Each is holding aloft a cold can of the same brand of soda while treading water, which with the backdrop of Manhattan could have been an ad accompanied by the music of I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing.
From the Almanac, March 1st, 1996. Lounsbury Pond, Hudson River Mile 42.5. It only gets one channel, but we never get tired of the programming. While this can be done on any frozen body of water, Lounsbury Pond, which drains to the Hudson a couple miles to the west, was one of the few area impoundments that still had sufficient ice. Lying prone over 5-inch holes cut in 10 inches of late winter ice, with hoods drawn over our heads to block out the daylight, hands cupped by our eyes, eyes an inch from the water, we watched the events unfolding 6 to 8 feet below. It was a world of great clarity, where fish appeared much larger, colors were muted, and objects seemed to appear out of nowhere. As we served grubs down through the water column, schools of bluegills, pumpkin seed, black crappie, and yellow perch would emerge from our peripheral view, take the bait, and then slowly dissolve out of sight. Another bait drop, another emergence, another fadeaway. If bait was kept available, the fish would form a ring around the offering, with individual fish alternately dashing in, grabbing a piece, and then retreating to the perimeter. This observation was contributed by Christopher Letts and Tom Lake. I'm Sean Anderson.
The Hudson River Almanac is an annual natural history journal compiled from the contributions of over 1,700 volunteers. Links on how to contribute materials or obtain copies are at www.hudsonriver.vassar.edu.
Time for the Hudson River Eco Calendar. I'm Jen Logan. A river of experience is what you'll discover at the Hudson River Regional Festival, featuring over 200 years of art, history, and music. Explore the past and present by taking part in a Dutch trading post, watching artisans working in local communities, and traveling along the river to see the views that inspired Thomas Cole and Frederick Church of the Hudson River School of Painting. You can also take in jazz and classical concerts at one of the riverfront communities, visit galleries and art exhibits, or take a leisurely walking tour. For a complete schedule of events, call 1-800-724-1846 or visit www.columbiacountyny.org. The 4th annual Hudson Valley River Ramble, scheduled for the weekends of September 20th and 21st and September 27th and 28th, will feature 125 guided walking, hiking, kayaking, canoeing, and equestrian events, as well as explorations of the Hudson River estuary by boat and on foot. Sponsored by the Hudson River Valley National Heritage Area and the Hudson River Valley Greenway, the Ramble takes place throughout 10 counties from just north of New York City to the Capital District. For a complete Ramble program guide, call 800-453-6665 or visit www.hudsonvalleyramble.com. The Hudson Riverama is a new, permanent exhibition at the Hudson River Museum in Yonkers. The 2,500-square-foot installation features recreations of forest, marsh, and estuary ecosystems, live fish, interactive computers, videos, and a 31-foot-long, three-dimensional topographic model of the river valley. An associated 45-minute planetarium show joins two families on an Adirondack hiking trip as they learn about the Hudson's flora and fauna. For more information, 914-963-4550. That's 914-963-4550.
Next week, we listen to historical songs and stories performed by Linda Russell, beginning with the Revolutionary War. We revisit Jean McAvoy of Betty and the Baby Boomers and hear a modern-day song of hers about a favorite quiet bay near Tivoli, New York. And we listen to the sounds of the river from further north in Columbia County's Stuyvesant. All this and more on the Hudson River. Some people say that the Hudson ends at Battery Park, where it joins the waters of Long Island Sound and Newark Bay to form New York Harbor. But on this week's Hudson River Soundscape, we go just beyond the Verrazano Narrows to Great Kills Beach on Staten Island, where these combined waters join the Atlantic Ocean. The Hudson River Radio program is produced in association with Vassar College, its Environmental Studies program, and its Journalism Forum. Our student assistant producers are digital editor Sean Anderson and researcher and editor Batsheva Gez. Vassar College professor Randy Cornelius is the project director. I'm your host, Mark Breslov, producer and project manager. This project has been funded in part by a grant from the New York State Environmental Protection Fund through the Hudson River Estuary Program. Special thanks to Fran Dunwell and Steve Stan of the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. Additional support for this program comes from Vassar College, with thanks to Susan Kuiper. Thanks also to Steve Rath. To listen to this program again or for more information, visit www.hudsonriver.vassar.edu. Email us at hudsonriver@vassar.edu.
The day was so worn away, like wood tossing in the tide. The sun sank over a Hudson Valley home, like it was trying to hide. Well, the sun was here in the beginning, and the sun will be here in the end. If it wasn't far above our heads, we might misuse it too. Be thankful it's so high up in the sky. Dirty rivers are enough, dirty rivers are enough to make us cry. River flow and mountain stream, water running strong. Some help from you and me. Well, the sun was here in the beginning, and the sun will be here in the end. If it wasn't far above our heads, we might misuse it too. Thankful it's so high up in the sky, 'cause dirty rivers are